Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I'm Jason Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And usually this is the Mind University podcast where we take you through one character or construct of pop culture. But over the last few weeks, a lot of events have been happening. History has been made, I believe. And we felt it was not right to do a normal episode this week and to not talk about it because the world has been impacted emotionally and mentally by the recent deaths of Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and George Floyd. And a lot of people out there are mourning and they are, you know, dealing with these senseless acts of racism. And there have been protests out in the world. I bet many of you have been going to these protests and demonstrations. And again, like I said, I think we are witnessing history being made right in front of us. And we definitely felt that we had to talk about it. But we want to say right out the gate that we know this isn't a news podcast and we know this isn't a philosophy podcast, but it would be ignorant of us to act like nothing is going on. And right out the gate, I want to say that we do support all the demonstrations and all the protests. And if any of you out there are listening to this and your immediate response is, ugh, just give me a podcast about superheroes. I don't need your opinion because you're podcasters. Then I say to you that this is our show. We can do whatever we want. And this is important. And if you are one of those, ugh, just give me a podcast about comic superheroes, I say, please stop listening now. And, you know, forget about this podcast. Just delete it from your feed. But for the rest of you, let's continue because we have a very special guest and a very special discussion. And Ashley, would you like to introduce our guest?
Yes. Today we are joined by a friend of Jason and I, incredible actor, martial artist, future Dick Grayson, Brandon Marino. You've seen him on For the People. You've seen him on Shooter. Go check out his IMDb. He's everywhere to be found. And we really wanted to invite Brandon to join us for this very special geek history lesson, not only because he's a listener and a friend and he's a nerd, but as two white people, we also want to learn to listen as well. So welcome, Brandon, to Geek History Lesson.
Thank you so much, guys.
Now, I know you have been a longtime listener of this podcast, and you've been a good friend of our podcast. And I just want to ask you this, Brandon. How are you feeling right now with everything that is happening in the world and what we're seeing?
It'll kind of change moment to moment. Various things that will bring anger or sometimes hope, a lot of encouragement. It is that thing where it is all being filmed now. So we're seeing so much and being exposed to so much. I think that there's a lot of pain in that, but there's also a lot of beauty being found in that and the people willing to lend their voice and speak up.
That's a great way to look
at
it.
That's beautiful. Yeah. That also hits me, too, because Brandon and I message a lot on Instagram, and I always tell him that I came for the Dick Grayson love, but I stay for the social justice. So I think that's really beautiful.
I want to real quick, before we get too far into our discussion about black heroes and black superheroes, I recently came across this quote from Gene Roddenberry this week. And I know Gene Roddenberry is not really lauded as a big voice in the black community, but he did give us Star Trek, which has always been about, you know, racial tolerance and all that stuff like that. And I have no idea what this quote is for, but I came across it and I thought it was so it just really speaks to the issue that it's at hand. So this is the quote from Gene Roddenberry. He says, "Intolerance in the 23rd century, improbable. If man survives that long, he will have learned to take a delight in the essential differences between men and between cultures. He will learn that differences in ideas and attitudes are a delight, part of life's exciting variety, not something to fear. It's a manifestation of the greatness that God or whatever it is gave us, this infinite variation and delight." And he's like, that is part of the optimism that we built into Star Trek. And I thought that this idea of the take delight in the essential differences between men and between cultures was just genius, and also just shows why he was a man ahead of his time.
Yeah, although he did still say men, but That's okay. Everyone can unfollow me first for that comment.
I think he's saying in the global.
It's reflective
in the
of
global
the time.
Men.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. I just had to get my jab in.
So, Brandon, we know you are a big fan of comic books. You are a big fan of superhero culture. And we thought that this would be a great time to talk about black superheroes or black heroes in media. And discuss good examples of them, who we think are good examples, who we think are bad examples. And we were talking about this off mic a little bit, because when the hashtag MeToo movement happened, which was a great movement as well, a couple years ago, it was brought out that media and pop culture can have broad effects on people's opinions, the way people think, and can actually set an example for future generations. So, Brandon, I want to talk to you just overall. Do you think superhero pop culture, whether that be comic books or movies, do they do a good job with African-American characters? How do you feel about that, just in a general sense?
In a general sense, I feel like it is getting better and better and is looking like it is continuing on that trend. It's funny, as you were, you know, as we were coming up to the episode, and I was thinking about throughout my life, black figures in pop culture and watching how it's evolved, to where as a kid, looking at black heroes in movies, all I can really recall is like Blade. And maybe the Black Power Ranger, if you consider that a superhero.
And now,
like, I have an Afro-Latino nephew who, growing up, Miles Morales is his Spider-Man.
That's pretty incredible. I don't know if either of you have seen this, but there is, I can't tell whether he's a teenager or an adult, but there has been a Miles Morales hanging out on the Brooklyn Bridge holding a Black Lives Matter. Have you seen the picture of this gentleman? It's really great. Yeah, that's a great example. Like, it is Miles Morales is, just off the top of my head, like one of the more profound recent additions, especially, I mean, when you think about how the contribution that Spider-Verse has made to that culture.
You mean the greatest superhero movie?
No, I don't. No, I don't. I want to bring up, so Brandon, I want to ask, what is your exposure to Milestone Comics? Do you know about Milestone Comics?
I know about Milestone. They were a little bit before my time in comic book reading, but I did catch Static Shock like every morning on, what was that, Kids WB or whatever. So I have a little familiarity.
Now, Static Shock is probably the biggest, that cartoon is probably the biggest contribution or I would say like creation of Milestone. But Milestone was created as this imprint of DC Comics that was independent. It was created by Dwayne McDuffie, Dennis Cohen, Michael Davis, and Derek T. Dingle. And originally, it was four titles. It was Icon, Static, it was Hardware, and the Blood Syndicate. And it was about Icon and Rocket. That's basically Black Superman. Static, of course, was sort of their Spider-Man, except he had electric powers. Hardware was sort of Black Iron Man. And then Blood Syndicate was sort of like their team. You could tell that Blood Syndicate was sort of like their answer to, like, this would be what Black Youngblood would be. And the whole idea was that they wanted to represent minorities in comic books because they believed that minorities were not being represented in comic books. And this started in 1993. I love Icon. Now, it's written by one of the greatest Superman writers of all time, the late, great Dwayne McDuffie, who I still, like, am so thankful that I actually met him 2 weeks before his death, and he was such a lovely gentleman in his thoughts. But I would recommend to everybody out there that they are so out of print because there's all these rights issues with Milestone and stuff like that, but DC did these trades about 3 or 4 years ago, and they are so far out of print. But Icon and Static and Hardware, Blended Syndicate is loosey goosey. It's not held up though.
90s.
Yes, but they are I've been rereading Icon this week for like the third time, and it is such a great comic book about an African-American Superman.
I would love to ask Brandon, because he brought up the Static Shock cartoon, and I know that that cartoon was wickedly popular, and a lot of people, I said this in all of our Green Lantern episodes, I said it on Blackest Night Club, I'll bring us up again, a lot of people think that the only Green Lantern is black because of the Justice League cartoon and Jon Stewart. Brandon, were there any cartoons that you remember from when you were growing up that you thought maybe did a better representation of black heroes and black superheroes than movies or live action shows?
No, Static is really the only, and then later Justice League are the only times that I could really remember seeing a cartoon show, like having a black hero that I looked up to. And I talk with my friends a lot about this. We were sort of so starved for black characters that in Dragon Ball Z, like, it's Piccolo. He's the
Heck
only one
yeah.
that doesn't have lighter skin. It's like, oh, he's different colored. He's our honorary black guy for this thing.
That's so funny, because anime also sort of follows under this weird thing where a lot of white audiences assume that the characters are white because, like, Usagi and Sailor Moon has blonde hair, but it's content that comes out of Japan. So obviously, in my opinion,
they're Asian.
They should be Japanese, unless specifically stated otherwise. But anime is also not always the most inclusive media form either. So that's interesting that Dragon Ball Z was something that really spoke to you. How do you feel about the sort of modern twist on Martian Manhunter being when he is a human, he presents as a black man?
And it's now kind of sort of accepted in media now that in every version, he's now...
Harry Lennox?
If he changes to human, he's now African-American.
It's Harry Lennox, and then you have Supergirl, and then... Yeah, I think it's so... interesting, and I think there's so many fascinating elements there, because you think about him and Superman. Superman is, you know, fortunate to be come to Earth looking, you know, for all intents and purposes, he's just another white American. And Martian Manhunter, when he stands before the world as Superman does in his green skin, it's a different reception. I think that is a really fascinating aspect of the character, that he's consistently portrayed as a black man. And I think there's something to be said there about his outsiderness in a different way that maybe Superman is an outsider.
Well, let's talk about Superman, because there are some alternate versions of Superman that are black. And to be honest with you, there's two of them that I am blown away that DC is not publishing their title. The first one for me, and this is a character that I've always loved dearly, is John Henry Irons Steel, also known as the Man of Steel. And when he was first introduced by Louise Simonson and John Bogdanovich, I can't say his last name.
Sorry, we love you. You're a great artist.
John Bog. He is a great artist. He was saved by Superman because he was working on a construction project. And when Superman, he fell off a skyscraper, Superman caught him. And when the man was like, I owe you, and Superman said, just make your life worth living. And he became Steel. He built this armor around himself and stuff like that. And after Reign of Superman, they published a Steel solo title, also written by Louise Simonson. And the great thing about that series, and I love that series, and that series is all on Comixology, so like 50 issues, is that it's about John moving back to Washington, D.C., and his entire family still lives there. His brother and his niece and his sister still live there. His mom is still alive. He has a nephew. It's literally Iron Man, but with a black family. And I love that book so dearly. And it blows me away that there is not a Steel book still being published. And then the alternate side is that Grant Morrison introduced this character that I like to call President Superman. who is he is President Calvin Ellis, and he is from Earth 23. And a lot of people have basically called him, he's President Obama's Superman, because he's the president of the United States, but he's secretly Superman. They made an action figure of him, which is so astounding, during DC Multiverse. And ever since that character was introduced, I was like, there needs to be a book at DC called President Superman. Like, I would buy the hell out of that book. Do you think that Superman overall, Brandon, has done a good job in terms of representing black heroes? I mean, do you think that Steel or President Superman, do you think there should always be a book at DC that basically features an African-American or an African hero as a representation of Superman? Because there's also Val Zod as well.
Yeah, that is one thing that I really like about DC, is that there are these notions of families where you have Superman at the top, and then you have all these other characters living up to that ideal in different circumstances. So absolutely, I would love to see an ongoing Steel title navigating that, the power and the responsibility and all those things that come with being a Superman type figure.
Now, Brandon, there is another DC hero out there. Of course, he's sometimes considered, some people call him DC's first black superhero, and this is Black Lightning. And Black Lightning, of course, has a great, CW series that's ran three seasons. I think it's going to get a fourth season. I'm pretty certain about that.
The greatest CW show.
Yeah.
The best CW show.
How do you feel about Black Lightning overall? And have you seen that show? Do you think that they do a good job?
I've seen a few episodes, and from what I've seen, I really did appreciate it. I think at the time I had been consuming so many of the CW shows, I was like, I'm going to take a small hiatus and kind of watch some other things for a minute. But from what I saw, they were tackling some, they were treating it like it's real. They were looking at real issues and real things that would come up for a character like that in that position. And I really appreciated the things that I did see that they were doing.
Did you watch all of Luke Cage?
Yes.
How do you think Luke Cage stands up against what you saw with Black Lightning, which is not like which one is better, but how would you compare those two approaches?
Ooh.
Because I know Luke Cage does tackle a lot of real world issues, and Mike Coulter, like Chris Williams, really ground some of the sillier parts of that character's story.
Absolutely. I'm going to lean more Luke Cage because I've seen a bit more of it. But then also because I think there's something just really powerful about a bulletproof black man, which I think was the tagline, or it was like a thing. That's such a powerful thing to see and to watch and absorb. I think I'd lean a little bit Luke Cage in my preferred one of the two.
Now someone's going to come to your Twitter and say, but Brandon, do you love DC better?
Please, I'm here for it.
Brandon, I want to ask you this question. What do you think that superhero pop culture, what could they do better in terms of representing the African-American community and their story and those type of people?
I think first and foremost, making sure that you have those voices in the writer's room and contributing. But from a consumer kind of standpoint, someone who watches these images, I think just the way that it's been progressing that I really love watching is getting these complex characters like Black Panther and Miles Morales and really treating them like heroes, giving them the space and the attention, and not having them be the sidekick. And it's something not to say that Falcon is Captain America's sidekick, but he's Steve Rogers' right-hand man for the Avengers films. And to see, I'm really excited to see upcoming this black man take on the mantle of Captain America.
I'm very excited about that as well.
Yeah. And something, and all that entailed. That is something that I really would love to see continue. And then, non-traditional casting is another main thing, and it's something that I am very passionate about.
Well, yes, because tell everybody that is listening right now, because you have, and I fully support your campaign, you for quite a while have been campaigning to play live action Dick Grayson in whatever movie they're eventually going to put him in there, because not only are you a talented martial artist, but I've seen your Instagram stories, and I'm pretty certain that you could kick most people's asses.
Fun fact, this was kind of how we met, was Brandon sent us a postcard that was sort of advocating for this project and for him taking on this role. So we're fully supportive of that.
Oh my God. Thank you. My heart. I think a lot of it is through just, you know, when I was a wee lad many years ago.
No, you're very young, Brandon's 21 years old.
21. playing on the playground and that notion from the other kids, like, you know, we're going to play superheroes. You can't be Batman. No, you can't be Superman. And I think it's a common experience, like many kids, you know, we'd be Spider-Man because, like, you can't see his skin. But I loved Batman, and I loved Dick Grayson and Nightwing so much. And the notion that I couldn't be that character because I just happened to be born with the wrong color skin, just ate away at me. And, I grew up studying Arnis, which is Eskrima, his weapons. Batman and Spider-Man were my favorite heroes when I was a kid. So, like, when I discovered Nightwing, he seemed like this amazing blend of the two that did the martial arts that I did, and it just seemed perfect. And kind of seeing an increase in representation, it really came from that idea of why can't I, why can't we have a black person play Batman or Nightwing or Superman? These are fictional characters made 80 odd years ago.
I love too that you bring up non-traditional casting, because when you're in the, we're going to get like a little industry here, when you're in LA and New York and a lot of entertainment centers, you hear all the time, well, we're casting the best person for the role. And then you get a little deeper into it, and it's a lot of it is studio deals and it's contracts and it's this and it's that. And if the conversation is we're casting the best person for the role, then the breakdown that you see or that your reps receive should say casting all types. It usually says all types, all races, instead of just dudes who have, look, and I love Henry Cavill and he looks like Kurt Swan Superman and I think he's wonderful in the part, but should be more than just white dudes with lantern jaws.
One example of that I really love is Jason Momoa.
Yeah.
Here you have Aquaman for decades and decades, who is blonde haired, blue eyed. And then along comes Zack Snyder, and whatever, you know, listeners may think about Zack, he's challenged that notion. And he's like, no, I want this, half Polynesian man to be my Aquaman.
Go ahead, Brandon. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah. And then you get these really, beautiful things when you do non-traditional casting, in that, things interact in ways that we don't expect or that we aren't used to. You know, Aquaman lines up perfectly with, you know, Polynesian culture of water gods and all those, things, those new flavors get to come out. Or even looking at the Batman coming up, we have a Black Commissioner Gordon, a Black police commissioner asking Batman to help him because he can't trust his police force is a very different conversation than a white one asking the same thing.
Also, Jeffrey Wright is perfect and should be in everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's interesting because I remember when the rumors broke that Jason Momoa was going to be cast in something, or they were talking to him, and that's when all the rumors started about him being Doomsday or Lobo. And I remember before they revealed that he was Aquaman, I literally turned over to Ashley and said, they should make him Aquaman because it would be one way that they could make everybody take that character seriously. And yeah, it is great. It is such a great choice to cast that character. And it's the same, like, you know me, my favorite comic book character of all time is Nightwing. And I see absolutely no problem with Nightwing not being white. He doesn't have to be white at all. Like, to be honest with you, he could be Asian, Hispanic, Black. It honestly would change nothing about the character.
I think any of the Robins, really, and, you know, this is a Robin Stan podcast, could be. And in fact, Damian Wayne should be a person of color.
I mean, he should he should probably be Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
There's some inconsistent coloring when it comes to Damian Wayne in various books. Yeah.
Talia as well, kind of depending on whether we want her to be a good guy or a bad guy. But that's a whole other kettle of fish with Miss Talia.
Brandon, you just brought something up that I want to touch on because I know you read comic books because you're a nerd. I've seen the pictures. as a person of color, does the coloring in comic books on certain characters and heroes of color or villains of color, does that bother you when like they're inconsistent?
Not that often. With Damian Wayne, it's a thing where I'm like, you know, he's not white, right? It doesn't bother me too much. In fact, sometimes there's these happy accidents that are really, like, as a fan, are really exciting. Like, there was a recent issue of Nightwing where for some reason they colored it and shaded a little darker, and like my heart jumped a bit. That's an exciting thing to see. I mostly read, to be honest, I mostly stick in the Batman camp of things, where there are more now, but there's not an abundance of characters of color. So I haven't noticed, like, issue to issue coloring variations that have bothered me.
Well, it's one of the things, too, you talked about, like, you're getting your heart jumping for, you know, seeing the shade of the Nightwing going a little bit darker. I can remember back in the 90s when I was reading Connor Hawke, the second Green Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, because a lot of the books that I was reading, they were coloring him as pure white. And then in his own solo series, when you met his mom, you were like, oh, Connor Hawke is half Black and half Korean. Like, I never realized that before.
It's the same thing. Oh, boy, that character surely did just right out of my mind who I was going to bring up. It's the same with Kyle Rayner. Because
mm-hmm.
Kyle Rayner is supposed
Hispanic.
To be Latinx.
Yeah.
And sometimes he looks real white. He's from North Hollywood. Shout out to everyone living in North Hollywood. But that was wild to me on Arrow because, you know, in season one, we do see that Oliver has a son who turns out to be a disappointing William. And we did get a version of Connor Hawke. And I do love the version that we got on Arrow. I thought he was great.
Yeah, those translations, when it goes from comics to TV. Oh, I might be mixing up my characters. Did we get a white Connor Hawke on Arrow?
No, on Arrow, they did this thing where they made Connor Hawke secretly John Diggle Jr., so he was an African-American.
Oh, that's right.
He would technically, he's technically biracial because
Because Lila is white.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Yeah.
But Ollie had a son. We met the girlfriend in season one, and his son is Caucasian, and that turns out to be William, who you meet again in season five?
I don't know.
I don't know what time is anymore. Anyway.
So, Brandon, there's kind of a great question that I would love to, you know, as we sort of wrap up this conversation is, obviously, in a lot of respects, it is, as much as we would love it, it is impossible for, you know, persons of color to always write persons of color, you know, just depending on the movie or the television show or the comic book. So for any non-persons of color that happen to be, say, writing a comic book or writing a movie or writing a television show about a person of color, what advice would you give to them, or what would you say to them to be like, this is what I would watch out for, or this is what I would do more research on? Like, what advice would you give to that writer, that creator, to do better?
I think mainly just that very thing. Keep doing research. Keep questioning assumptions that you might have. You know, there are, you know, so many people of color that now have a voice. It's, you know, we're not hard to find. And we have the internet at our fingertips, all of us. So I would say learn as much as you can, get as many firsthand accounts as you can. Yeah, and just, I think, really immersing yourself in various people's lived in experiences, and yeah, go from there.
I just want to add that I think it's so wild that these words are about to come out of my mouth. You kind of have to do what the Watchmen TV show did. Can you believe I just said something nice about Watchmen?
You mean like make sure that over 50% of your staff is people of color?
Yeah, or women, or whatever the experience is that you're attempting to represent accurately, because Damon Lindelof, and we like Damon Lindelof on this show, is a very powerful white dude. And everyone likes to cite, and it's a great example, everyone likes to cite Marilyn Monroe as someone who used her privilege really well. But I think Damon Lindelof used his privilege really well by being like, cool, I'm neither a woman nor a black person. And so he filled his staff with people who lived those experiences. And as a result, we got a show that was very lauded and very well respected. And I've still not seen.
We're going to watch it next. We're going to watch it very soon, just because it is so timely.
It is.
Yeah, who knew that that show was 9 months ahead of its time?
Yeah, and who knew that Black Manta was going to be this incredible figure right now?
Man.
Brandon, my final question to you would be, Ashley and I are two white people that do a podcast, and we are painfully white, my friend. She from Canada, me from middle of nowhere, red state, Kansas. What would your advice be to white Caucasian people in America right now? How can we help? How can we do better just in the general world?
In the general world, I mean, I would say it's very similar to the question for people writing. Just seek as many voices and experiences as you can, humbly. Recognize that the situation is not about you personally, but about the forces that have enacted on us in different ways to create the society that you know, you benefit from and others don't. And seek out many voices. I am one of many. I'm biracial. I'm from a very white suburb of Seattle, which is not known for its diversity, although there is some. So I have my own personal work and biases to combat as well. So keep seeking out voices that are vastly different from your own and listen to their experiences.
And I do want to say, Brandon, like, we've thanked you a lot for agreeing to do this, but also thank you for lending your voice to us and for being an educator for us and for all the listeners, because nobody who is a different voice than your own has any responsibility to teach you, and that can be burdensome. And I just want you to know that, like, we really, really appreciate you taking the time to answer all of our questions, to join us for everything today.
I also just wanted to appreciate you being a good sport for us, just being like, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? Because, again, we part of the reason why we wanted to do this episode was because we wanted to, like you said, find those different perspectives, and hopefully our listeners appreciate your different perspective as well.
We also put this together very quickly, so thank you to Brandon for opening a schedule up to us for this.
By scheduling the apocalypse so full.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to move into our recommended reading segment here. And Brandon, we have some choices, but we would love to hear your choice at the very end as well. If you have some choices, if you think there were anything we could add to this list, you can, of course, find this over at geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading. Ashley, why don't you kick it off?
Yeah, so we have three comics choices for you, and then we have three prose choices for you this week. The first book on here, it's the most obvious choice for me. It's also, we tried to curate things for this particular list. We have not curated in the past, so we've recommended Black a lot. We did a book club on it, so that's not going to make the list. But our first choice today is The March Trilogy by Representative John Lewis. It is based on his experiences in the South during the 60s. It focuses a lot on the march and the events, if you're familiar with the movie Selma, that took place where he was alongside Martin Luther King. It is beautiful. It is stunning.
I believe it's Eisner nominated as well.
I believe it's Eisner winning?
It might be.
I don't know. I didn't make a note about that. I apologize. I'm not going to apologize to the Eisners. They haven't nominated us yet. You can get the March Trilogy. The easiest way to get your hands on it is to get the complete collected edition. And honestly, why would you buy the individual volumes? Get all of it.
Our another two choices is, of course, we have the Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man Collection Volume 1. As we mentioned earlier in the podcast, Miles Morales is real, and apparently he's around the Brooklyn Bridge holding up a sign that says Black Lives Matter, and I think that's awesome. But if you like the Spider-Verse movie, everything you love about that movie comes from this collection, and I will also postulate this: Uncle Aaron's death hits you harder in the comic books than it does in the movies. It's pretty sad. And then another choice, of course, we mentioned it, is Icon, A Hero's Welcome. This is the wildly out-of-print trade paperback from 2009 that collects the first six issues of the Milestone series Icon. It's written by amazing, one of the best writers of all time, Dwayne McDuffie. I'm reading this book right now, reread it for the third time. It is so amazing. I love it so much. It is so far ahead of its time. And then we also have three prose choices. The first one is Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates, who is also the current Captain America writer right now. And it is you want to talk about getting a different perspective about how America works from a perspective you never would have considered. This is a great book to read. And also, you should read this book if you were a fan of HBO's Watchmen. This is the book that inspired Damon Lindelof to make that season.
Ta-Nehisi Coates also did a run on Black Panther. We recommended his run in our Black Panther episode that heavily influenced the Black Panther movie. So if you enjoyed that movie, definitely check out this essay. We also want to recommend The Fire Next Time by James Baldwin. James Baldwin was an activist for his whole life, but particularly during the 60s and 70s, he was an activist as well for the gay liberation front and for queer people. And if you read this around the same time that you read Between the World and Me, you will realize that the structure of The Fire Next Time is very similar to the structure of Between the World and Me. And that is really cool. I just read this for a book club that I'm in. And James Baldwin also wrote If Beale Street Could Talk, which was just made into an Oscar winning movie. And then lastly, because she was a goddess in her time, the classic I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou. That is rounding out our recommended reading this week. You will never read anything more beautiful than I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings.
Brandon, if you have any choices, if you have anything that you would love to add to the recommended reading, we would love to hear it. And if not, no worries.
A couple of things that have meant a lot to me personally. From the New 52, Batwing Volume 4, Welcome to the Family, introducing Luke Fox as Batwing. I took a selfie with the page where he was introduced, because you rarely see black men who are incredible martial artists as well as incredible scientists and so compassionate and loving towards their family and friends. And that character means a lot to me. And then this one is a little off the beaten path for comic book things, but I think that Creed is dang near a superhero film in terms of...
I would agree with that.
The way that they treat their character, you know, trade the trunks for a cape, and it's pretty much there. The way that they... Again, he looks at things that we're familiar with the Rocky franchise, and because he's, you know, a young black man from California, it interacts in ways you don't expect. And they really treat Adonis Creed like a hero in that film, which I think the images that we consume are so important.
I love that movie.
That was too off the top of my head.
That's one of those movies that
shouldn't work.
Well, yeah, that's one of those movies that shouldn't work. And at every turn, that movie like is such a solid film.
I think a great recommendation for, I mean, you said it was off the beaten path, Brandon, but I mean, if people loved Black Panther, get you some more Michael B. Jordan right here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So everyone out there, we just want to thank you for coming along with us on this conversation. If you are one of our patrons, there will be no episode of Geekish Lesson Extra this week. Instead of doing a Geekish Lesson Extra episode, we are going to donate to Black Lives Matter, which we think everybody out there should do it. I did a donation earlier this week. A whole bunch of other people, great comic book creators, have done it as well. You can go to blacklivesmatter.com. If it matters to you, it is tax deductible, but it shouldn't matter to you because it's just a good thing to support. And it is a very important organization right now. So we please, everyone listen to this podcast. If you got any insight, any education, any new perspective from today's episode, I would just, even if it's a dollar, give it to blacklivesmatter.com this week. And of course, we want to thank our extra amazing Nightwing himself guest, Brandon Marino, for joining us on this special episode of Geek Extra Lesson. Brandon, please tell all our listeners where they can find you online, and especially promote your Instagram, because they need to see all the amazing jump kicks you do.
All right. Thank you so much. Online, everywhere, you can find me at the Bat Marino. BATMARINO. If you want to skip most of my Instagram and go straight to Nightwingy things, the hashtag Dark Nightwing will do that. And I've been living with the character for about 3 years now, and decided to make a short film out of everything that I've learned and loved about Nightwing. So that will be at Nightwing Stray on Instagram as well.
Heck yeah, I just followed it, so go and follow that account too.
All right, everybody out there, thank you so much for listening to this very special episode. Don't forget, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jawin, that's J-A-W-I-I-N. And Ashley, where can they follow you on Instagram and Twitter?
You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. I've been losing followers all month, so prove that they suck and come follow me.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. This has been a very special episode of Geek History Lesson. I'm Jason Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And class is now dismissed.